Hello, welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, March 21st. I'm Dagna, your reader today. We'll begin with today's five-day forecast for the Siouxland area. And today will be times of clouds and times of sun, with a high of 54 and a low tonight of 33, with a possibility of showers this evening. Friday will be breezy and cooler with a high of 42 and a low of 20. Saturday will be cloudy with the possibility of some snow with a high of 43 and a low of 34. Sunday will be rainy and maybe thunderstorms with a high of 47 and a low of 35. And Monday will possibly have snow in the morning and ice at night, with a high of 40 and a low of 18. Our first front page story today is from South Sioux City, Eye in the Sky. Roughly a year ago, 35 cameras were affixed to black poles on major thoroughfares in South Sioux City. The cameras, which capture high-resolution images of the backs of vehicles and license plate data, are a component of Flock Safety's License Plate Recognition, or LPR, system. Since the LPR cameras were implemented last April with City Council approval, the police department has located 20 stolen vehicles and aided in 3 outside agency homicide investigations, including the fatal stabbing of a Dakota Dunes woman in August. It really helped us ultimately with providing information to attempt to get him located, Police Lieutenant Jeanette McPhee said of Alfredo Castellanos Rosales. The 39-year-old Sioux City man has pleaded not guilty to charges of first-degree murder, contributing to the neglect of a child, and contributing to the abuse of a child in connection with the April 25th stabbing death of 23-year-old Jordan Beardshear in her apartment at the Wellington at the Dunes complex. Flock Safety's LPR system allows South Sioux City police officers to use their laptops and cell phones to query identifying vehicle features such as color, make, bumper sticker, top rack, and pickup box. It also sends an alert to law enforcement when a vehicle on the hot list is detected in the area. The system leverages the National Crime Information Center, or NCIC, a computerized index of missing persons and criminal information. Fee said, if a license plate is entered into NCIC, once it passes one of those cameras, an internal system notifies us that possibly the owner has a warrant or there's possibly a missing person inside the vehicle. Flock Safety's cameras, which are in operation in more than 4,000 cities in 42 states, have come under fire from the American Civil Liberties Union, which has asked citizens to reach out to local elected officials and law enforcement to pump the brakes on the use of what is called a nationwide mass surveillance system. The ACLU said in a February 23 report published on its website, such a system provides even small-town sheriffs access to a sweeping and powerful mass surveillance tool and allows big tech actors like federal agencies and large urban police departments to access the comings and goings of vehicles in even the smallest of towns. South Sioux City Police Chief Ed Mahoon said he's only heard from a couple of individuals who are concerned about Big Brother potentially watching in South Sioux City. He said only one person he talked with was strongly opposed to the cameras. He said, we are not trying to be Big Brother. We just want another tool. We can reach out and get information we really need for the worst crimes. Mahoon said Flock Safety's LPR system does not use facial recognition technology, the ability to match a human face from an image to a database of faces. It's just to the rear of the car, he said, of what the cameras capture. Occasionally, we'll get a front plate, but I don't know if you could really identify anybody out of the front. While searching the data LPR cameras capture, McPhee said officers have to report what they're looking for. She said Nebraska state statute requires that searches be related to criminal activity. She said the images taken by the camera are gone from a secure cloud server after 30 days. She said, if I'm driving down the street as a patrol officer, I'm seeing all kinds of license plates. That's exactly what these cameras are getting. They're not telling me whose car that is. I don't know that. I would have to do further investigation, running the plate and doing all that before I know whose vehicle that would be. If someone's not involved in a crime, I'm not looking at their car. Mahone said Flock Safety's LPR cameras, which are solar and battery operated, are a really good tool for his department. Even the dispatchers have access to the internet-based system, which allows them to assist officers in locating a vehicle when an alert comes in. Mahone said, "I think there's been a tremendous amount of interest from the officers and a lot of activity. It's one of the high-tech items that really the officers use all the time." South Sioux City is leasing the camera system from Flock Safety at a cost of around $100,000 over a 2-year period. American Rescue Plan Act funding is covering the cost of the cameras, which Flock Safety provides 24/7 tech support for. Dakota County also has 4 LPR cameras. From my perspective, they've been working extremely well. We have found several missing cars. We found the issues with murder cases here that happened in other areas. We're glad to see that it's expanding and covering many more cities across the county, South Sioux City Administrator Lance Hedquist said of the Flock system. I think it's done great. Since the cameras were installed, McPhee said the system helped police locate 6 missing people who were entered into the NCIC, including a juvenile female who was found in an adult male suspect's vehicle. She said the cameras even led to the identification of individuals who were passing counterfeit bills in Sioux City and South Sioux City. McPhee continued, "We found that the vehicle had been a rental vehicle, and in the last month it had gone from Michigan to Iowa, through Illinois, Des Moines, Nebraska, and back through Illinois and Wisconsin to Michigan. It's basically a big counterfeiting ring where they're getting items with these counterfeit bills at different businesses. We have nationwide access, so any agency that has a Flock camera, we can search. I was able to search this particular vehicle going through all those areas." South Sioux City saw a 6.3% decrease in serious and violent crime last year, as well as a 6.7% decrease in total crime. Motor vehicle thefts dropped by nearly 44%, from 41 in 2022 to 23 in 2023. Mahone is unsure whether LPR cameras are a contributing factor in the decline, but he hopes they are deterring criminals. "If we could afford it, I would love to double the number of cameras and really put out there, if you're going to do this, don't come here, because we're going to do everything we can to arrest you," he said. Last April, the Sioux City Council approved a resolution allowing South Sioux City to install 2 of its LPR cameras on the Iowa side of the Siouxland Veterans Memorial Bridge. During a February 17th operating budget session, Sioux City Councilwoman Julie Shaner asked Police Chief Rex Mueller if his department intends to pursue LPR cameras. Mueller said, "Right now, the state is kind of lumping LPRs into ATE, automated traffic enforcement, so we are unsure where that's going to go. We are monitoring that." He also mentioned there are some private LPR cameras operating in the city. "Depending how automated traffic enforcement comes out, we think that's a positive resource. But what we're also looking at is some of the automated traffic enforcement companies out there actually have LPR capabilities. So rather than just putting in LPR cameras, you have ATE cameras that can also have that capability." Sioux City Police Captain Ryan Bertrand told the Journal the police department is going to ask the council for permission to apply for a Burn JAG grant to fund the purchase of LPR cameras. He said the police department is partnering with the Woodbury County Sheriff's Office and Tri-State Drug Task Force on the grant request, which will be in the neighborhood of $125,000. Bertrand said that there are 6 other LPR systems, but he said Flock Safety's is the one the police department spent the most time researching. He also said, "For quality, network, bang for the buck, affordability, Flock is the one we're looking at right now. It is a subscription-based kind of service. Flock owns the camera, hardware, and equipment. They maintain the equipment. If the equipment breaks, there's no charge. If every police agency in the United States had a Flock system, you would have an incredibly powerful intelligence network. Your crime-fighting abilities would be amazing." Bertrand said as few as 10 LPR cameras could have an impact in the city if they were to put in the right places. Exactly how many cameras Sioux City could acquire is up in the air, as the grant funding is not guaranteed. Bertrand said the cameras would be placed in public locations where everybody has a right to be. "There is no Fourth Amendment concerns. There's no privacy concerns. The license plate readers focus on license plates. They're not capturing data 24/7. They're not full-time surveillance cameras that way, said Bertrand, who said he thinks more people today expect businesses and property owners to have working cameras. People actually are embracing technology that way. Most people want to be safe. They want to be protected. Our next story concerns the Woodbury County Jail. More COVID recovery funds dedicated to new Woodbury Jail amid delays. The Woodbury County Board of Supervisors voted to devote an additional $471,000 from the county's share of federal COVID-19 recovery funds to cover cost overruns for the new law enforcement center. Originally, the supervisors allocated $10 million of American Rescue Plan Act funding to the LEC, but after a series of moves, the funding was reduced to $9.5 million. The $471,000 approved Tuesday brings the total back up to $10 million. The supervisors voted unanimously to allocate the money due to change orders fulfilled by the general contractor Hausman Construction. Board Chair Matthew Ung said the reallocation is specifically for the change orders and needs to be paid so on-site work at the new jail can continue. The new jail had been expected to be completed by April 9th, but LEC officials announced last week the project would be pushed back to mid-May due to actions, inactions, and errors by Introba, Inc., an engineering consultant hired by Goldberg Group Architects for the project. In September, the project was delayed due to the discovery of fire dampers missing in the structure. County Supervisor Mark Nelson said the ARPA funds will go towards the Introba-related issue and the fire dampers that caused the latest delays, and stressed that these damages occurred, not caused at the fault of the county. These will be monies we will litigate for as part of our damage recoupment after it is built, he said. Under U.S. Treasury Department guidelines, the county's one-time allowance of COVID recovery funds can be spent on government services. The rules allow local governments to claim up to $10 million of revenue losses from the pandemic, even if actual losses were less, and the recipients are permitted to use up to that amount to fund government services. The supervisors voted to do so in February 2022 to cover the increased construction costs of the facility. In September 2023, the supervisors unallocated $941,000 due to having other funding for furniture, fixtures, and equipment for the facility. In November, the board reallocated $470,000 of it to pay a Hausman construction bill for subcontractor work. Supervisor Jeremy Taylor said the project cost has risen to almost $72 million, with the county utilizing APRA funds and interest received from the bond issue to cover cost overruns. Woodbury County voters passed a $50.3 million bond issue in March 2020, but due to the pandemic and supply chain problems, the low bid for the main construction phase came in well above estimates at $58.4 million from Hausman Construction. There is no more money. After tonight, there is not a single dollar of ARPA money left. There's no more interest. There's no more bond capacity. Bottom line is the well has run dry. There's nothing left, Taylor said. After tonight, I cannot support another dollar being given to the project. After tonight, there's no more money. Ung said down the road, the county may need to find more money in the budget for litigation costs. The board on Tuesday decided to wait on replacing an air conditioning compressor at the current downtown jail due to the new jail's delay. In the fall, the jail had two air conditioning compressors fail, according to board documents. One compressor was repaired, but the remaining compressor and system refrigerant will now need to be replaced. The low bid was $39,995 from C.W. Souter and is good until April 19th. Nelson said we should have been in the jail by now to where this was a non-factor, but we're not, and it's not at the fault of the county or the LEC. It's beyond our control. Kenny Schmitz, Building Service Director, said there are three operational compressors and normally the fourth stage compressor is unnecessary unless temperatures are above 90 degrees with high humidity. Schmitz said he would be willing to delay action on the item due to current temperatures. Nelson added temperatures for the next 2 weeks are expected to be below average. The county could order and install a compressor faster than Schmitz previously estimated, he said. Originally, he thought it would take 6 weeks to be completed, but now believes it could be done in 2 weeks. He also said there is a mobile rental unit that could be used in an emergency for $36,000 for the first month. Schmitz provided the board with a 5-year monthly humidity average. He said the average for April is 61.74%. For May, it's 57.71%, and for June, it's 61.2%. A normal range is 40 to 60%. Anytime you hit anything over 60%, you're hitting a humidity level that is uncomfortable or not a good working environment, he said. The board decided to wait and monitor the weather before moving forward with any replacement. Our next story is from the Hinton School Board meeting. The Hinton Community School Board accepted the resignation of Casey Crawford from his role as a high school wrestling coach Monday night. Crawford will continue in his role as a teacher in the district. Superintendent Ken Slater also spoke about proposed district policy changes, including a discipline policy, bullying prevention, and rules governing state trips. He also discussed a potential coach training program the district could invest in. Crawford, who has coached the Blackhawks wrestling team for 15 years, has been on coaching leave since mid-February when allegations emerged that some upperclassmen on the boys' wrestling team may have restrained and shocked younger teammates with a stun gun. The resignation was accepted by the board in a 4-0 vote. Board President Kyle Huffling thanked Crawford for his service to the district. I have thoroughly enjoyed my last 15 years as the wrestling coach at Hinton High School, Crawford said in his letter to the Hinton School Board. I am grateful for those years and that chance to build a program as well as a positive impact on the athletes' lives. I look forward to continuing my career as a teacher here at Hinton. A section of Crawford's resignation letter was redacted. Slater said it was done due to the confidential nature of the information. The situation has been difficult for the Hinton community, one citizen said at the meeting. A man who gave his name as Randy said, "You can't go anywhere in the city with Hinton gear on without somebody asking you what happened up there in Hinton. This debacle isn't finished with that resignation tonight." Crawford was placed on coaching administrative leave due to an incident alleged to have occurred while the team was at the state wrestling dual tournament February 3rd in Coralville. One of the mothers of students told the Journal that on both February 2nd and February 3rd, two upperclassmen held down younger teammates on a bed and a third upperclassman shocked them with a stun gun. Regarding the situation, two Hinton students were reassigned, and law enforcement authorities in Coralville, Iowa, and Hinton have been investigating. Slater presented a slate of proposed policy changes to district handbooks. He said the proposal was made in collaboration with parents and staff due to recent events. He said, "You use situations to grow stronger, to get better, to learn and improve. We do a lot of the right things, and there's always areas that we can improve on. That's what we're working on here." An addition to the activities handbook would address state tournament planning, food, and lodging. Under the proposed policy, if a program or a program member qualifies for a state competition, the head coach would have a meeting with the administration to review needs and itinerary. Meal stipends of $15 per participant would be provided. Lodging would be provided, and a trip itinerary would be provided. The itineraries would include time of departure and arrival for various activities and competition, hotel lodging addresses and phone numbers, approved number of adults, room checks scheduled and random, bag checks, emergency contacts with medical information, expectations of dress, decorum, and behavior in representing Hinton, consequences of misbehavior, and room assignments. Use a well-thought-out plan on who will room with one another, making sure roommates are a good fit. Another proposed change is implementing a discipline chart, which would outline the different types of incidents that could occur and what steps would be taken. Slater shared a chart that was implemented in his previous school district. The chart shows different types of incidents and what would occur on the first, second, and third offense and when police would be notified. Other proposed changes included improving behavior report tracking from kindergarten to 12th grade, adding guidance for staff-to-student communication and use of social media by staff, implementing a bullying prevention program, addressing student or staff injuries before or after school, and changing the activity communications program. Slater said the policies will be discussed by district staff and administration before being presented to the board for approval. He estimated the policies would be put in place before August. In his superintendent report, Slater spoke about a program called 3D Institute, which is designed to provide training to coaches and athletic directors. Sioux City denies FOIA request concerning inclusion liaison suspension. Sioux City. Days after an internal memo about the suspension of the City of Sioux City's culture inclusion liaison was leaked to the journal, city staff have declined to release information about what exactly prompted the disciplinary action. On March 14th, a journal reporter filed an open records request with the city under the Freedom of Information Act, which is abbreviated as FOIA, seeking the following information. Documents including, but not limited to, an investigation concerning violations of city work rules by Samhar Gebrekadan. Documents placed in Gebrekadan's personnel file providing the reasons and rationale for certain disciplinary actions, which would be considered public records and must be provided in response to an open records request per House File 291. City Attorney Nicole Dubois denied the requested documents in an email Monday, writing that documents including, but not limited to, an investigation concerning violation of city work rules are confidential under Iowa Code 22.7. The code section cites an exemption to the open records law for personal information in confidential personnel records of government bodies relating to be identified or identifiable individuals who are officials, officers, or employees of the government bodies. In response to the journal's FOIA request for documents placed in Gebrekadan's personnel file, Dubois wrote, "There are none." As of Wednesday afternoon, Dubois had not yet responded to a modified request the journal emailed Tuesday afternoon. Under Iowa open records laws, the city has 10 business days to reply to the request and up to 20 calendar days to determine what should be made available if the request could include confidential records or information. Gebrekadan was suspended with pay effective February 21st, pending the completion of an investigation concerning violations of city work rules, according to the internal memo. She has been employed with the city since 2021. During Monday's city council meeting, several residents spoke out against her suspension. "She's still suspended. Her supervisor will tell her when it ends. She's been on it for 30 days Thursday," said Jim Jung, who serves on the Inclusion Sioux City Advisory Committee, which Gebrekadan oversees. "No reason is given in this memo why she's at home, so I'm here to show my support for Samhar." City staff and council members said little during the exchange, which occurred during the citizen comments portion of the meeting. At one point, when a supporter asked whether she could pose questions to the council, Councilwoman Julie Shaner responded, "We are not allowed to answer." Sioux City resident Tricia Rivers said she's not sure why Gebrekadan was suspended, but she said she's upset about the suspension and wants answers from the city. "We are the second most diverse county here in the state of Iowa, and we're doing this to a pregnant Black woman. Do none of you care? Bob, do you care?" Rivers said, directing her question at Mayor Bob Scott. Scott responded by saying that Gebrekadan has hired an attorney. "When someone hires an attorney, we don't have the privilege or the opportunity to say anything in the public about that," he said. Dubois said that personnel matters are confidential and the city is prohibited from comments. Maria Anna Parcheco, a Sioux City resident and educator, said the city has taken cruel measures against Samhar, whose role is centered around fostering a more inclusive workplace. "It is a shame that instead of acknowledging Samhar's valuable contributions to the community, your perspective is blinded by an animosity leading to cruel measures such as unwarranted and unlawful house arrest upon a pregnant woman who you all know is at high risk," Pacheco said. The memo states that during Gebrekadan's suspension, her residence essentially becomes her assigned work area. The memo said, "If you want to be absent from your residence for any reason other than a lunch period, You must contact your supervisor in advance and obtain the appropriate authorization. If you want to leave town at any time during this time period, you need to contact your supervisor in advance and obtain the appropriate authorization. If approved, your time card will reflect the use of sick leave. The memo goes on to say that Gebrekaden must contact her supervisor if she needs to go to a medical appointment or pharmacy or schedule a medical treatment. The memo stated, you must contact your supervisor in advance when practical for authorization. If approved, your time card will reflect the use of sick time. Gebrekaden's suspension is in effect until she is notified by her supervisor to return to work, according to the memo. You will be notified at the completion of the investigation, the memo states. Gebrekaden's husband, Logan Arguello, told the council there have been many times that he wanted to come before the council and express his concerns. He spoke about his wife being put in uncomfortable and even dangerous situations while on the job, but Gebrekaden asked him to refrain from doing so. He mentioned that Gebrekaden's performance was brought up by Councilman Matthew O'Kane last year and Councilman Alex Waters this year during city budget sessions. It seems that the city only appreciates my wife when it's easy and makes you look good. As soon as it's uncomfortable, you lash out and hurt her. I didn't say anything because my wife handled all of these incidences and more without any support, he said. But I do have to say something about what you did to her almost 4 weeks ago. You put my wife on suspension for doing her job, which is calling out social injustices at the city of Sioux City. Ike Rayford, the president of the Sioux City's chapter of the NAACP, said the community inclusion liaison is very important to the community, as well as the NAACP. He described the city's internal memo as vague and said it really made no sense. We are concerned. We would love to know what needs to happen and what we can do that she is protected. I believe that she has done the job she was hired to do, he said. Gebrekaden worked in a variety of diversity, equity, and inclusion positions throughout her time in college. Before coming to work for the city of Sioux City, she was employed as an HIV case manager at Siouxland Community Health Center. Last March, Gebrekaden was honored during the 38th Annual Women of Excellence Award Ceremony with the award for Women Striving to Improve the Quality of Life. Then, in November, Gebrekaden launched a campaign for a vacated Sioux City School Board seat. She ultimately lost the election to Dan Greenwell, who is currently serving the 2-year term on the board. We now have some news briefs. Mitchell has resigned as Emergency Service Director. Hornick Mayor Scott Mitchell has resigned as the Woodbury County Emergency Services Director. Mitchell resigned effective Friday. He was hired in June 2022, replacing Andrew Donawa, who resigned after just 6 months as director due to hostile work environment he contributed to current and former staff. Mitchell said in his resignation letter, "This decision was not easy, but after considerable thought, I believe it is the right choice for my personal journey and well-being. It has been an immense honor and privilege to serve our citizens and contribute to the safety and security of our county in this capacity." Mitchell told the Journal that he enjoyed his time in the role, but it wasn't the job for him, and he has gotten the opportunity to move on to something else. After Donawan left, Mitchell was chosen out of the top three on the supervisor's list after a variety of job interviews. Mitchell has been mayor of Hornick since 2015. He was overwhelmingly reelected in 2019 after leading the town through one of the worst floods in its history. Bob Welty was again selected to serve as interim director. Welty, a former director of Siouxland Paramedics, worked part-time for the Woodbury County Emergency Services. He served as interim after Donawa resigned. Donawa, who was hired as director in November 2021, said he resigned due to a hostile work environment he attributes to the current and former staff, including his predecessor, Gary Brown. Brown retired in July 2021 after 41 years with the county. The emergency service director position has been posted with a salary range of $70,473 to $92,157, according to Woodbury County Board of Supervisors documents. You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, March 21st on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. We'll now go to today's obituaries. Phil Neural, age 96, passed away March 18th at Mercy One Siouxland Medical Center. Services will be at 11 a.m. March 23rd at St. Joseph Church in Ponca, with the Reverend Owen Court officiating. Co-celebrating the Mass will be Father Jim Cramper, Father Andy Solm, Deacon Dennis Knudsen, and Deacon Paul Trainin. Burial will be at Calvary Cemetery, rural South Creek, Ponca, with military rites conducted by the American Legion Post 117 of Ponca. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. March 22nd at the church with the family present. An evening service will be at 7 p.m. with a rosary to follow. Arrangements are under the direction of Moore Meyer Brothers Funeral Home. Phil was born at St. Vincent's Hospital, Sioux City, on the Feast of the Assumption, August 15, 1927, the son of Orrin Neural and Bonnie Neural. Phil attended grade school at Ponca Public School and graduated from Trinity High School, Sioux City, in 1945. He immediately entered the U.S. Navy, where he served as a yeoman aboard ship. Phil remained aboard ship throughout World War II, serving in both the Atlantic and Pacific fleets. At the conclusion of World War II, Phil was transferred into the Naval Reserve, where he completed his enlistment and received his honorable discharge. In 1950, Phil and his brothers Jack and Bob purchased the Ford dealership in Ponca from their father, and Phil remained with that dealership until his retirement in 1994. At that time, Phil's son, Kelly, took over the ownership and management of the dealership. Phil married Patricia McNaughton on December 30, 1950, at St. Boniface Catholic Church, Sioux City. They made their home in Ponca, where their three children were raised, Dr. Jeffrey Neural, Kelly Neural, and Bonnie McCormick. Phil served as the Ponca City Clerk in the early 1950s under then-Mayor Buff Iverson. He was elected to the Ponca School Board and served 13 years on the Northeast Nebraska Technical College, acting as their board chairman in 1975. Phil was a charter member of the Ponca Medical Board, the Better Ponca Foundation, a permanent member of the Ponca American Legion Post 117, a member of the Knights of Columbus, Blue Birds Across Nebraska, and the Lewis and Clark Heritage Foundation. Phil was a longtime volunteer scoutmaster of the Ponca Boy Scout Troop 200, and with the assistance of Fran Kingsbury, Lionel Froseth, and Robert Hurley, built and successfully guided, at that time, Nebraska's largest Boy Scout troop, resulting in 17 Eagle Scouts. Phil was awarded the Silver Beaver Scouting Award by the Boy Scouts of America. In lieu of flowers, Phil has asked that donations be made to the South Creek Calvary Cemetery Association or the Ponca Educational Foundation. David C. Gunther, 86, of Grand Forks, North Dakota, and formerly from Lamars, Iowa, passed away Saturday, March 16th, at his home in Mesa, Arizona. By his side was his wife and the love of his life, Jane. A memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, May 18th, at Calvary Lutheran Church, 1405 South 9th Street, Grand Forks, North Dakota. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. in the church on Saturday. LaVon E. Ferguson, age 100, of North Sioux City, South Dakota, passed away March 18th. Services will be 1 to 4 p.m. May 11th at the Christy Smith Larkin Chapel. Private family burial at Logan Farm Cemetery. Vernon E. Woody Meyer, 55, of Sergeant Bluff, passed away peacefully on Friday, March 15th, at Mercy One Medical Center following a severe stroke. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday, March 21st, at Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel. Funeral services will be at 10:30 a.m. Friday, March 22nd, at Sunnybrook Community Church. Burial at Graceland and lunch at the church will follow. Vernon was born on December 5, 1968, to Harlan and Connie Bartlett Meyer in Sac City, Iowa. He attended Sac City schools prior to moving to Lytton. He graduated from Lytton High School in 1987, where he excelled in football, basketball, track, golf, and baseball. He was also incredibly involved with FFA and 4-H, serving as county president. Vernon attended Morningside College and later transferred to Westmar College, where he graduated in 1993. While in Lamar's, he was employed at Westmar, Elko, Adler's, and bartended at Archie's and Dar's Rock and Roll Palace, where he became known as Woody, as he looked like Woody from Cheers. It was in the Lamar's Hy-Vee where he would meet Eileen Berg. They were married on June 19, 1993, in Lamar's. They would go on to have three beautiful and amazing daughters who were the light of his life. He was the fun dad, where jokes were plentiful and was always up for any whim that they thought up. Building forts and snowmen, giving the best bull rides, zip lining, which he hated, and baking pumpkin bread for the whole neighborhood are just some of the adventures they experienced. Vernon would work at Hy-Vee in Lamar's in Sioux City and later MCI. In 2000, Vernon began his career with the Boy Scouts of America. It was here that lifelong friendships with many BSA volunteers and professionals began. He would later continue in nonprofit service with the Gospel Mission and the Boys Club. He ventured into the private sector, working at Adventure Services, and entered the credit processing world with Heartland Payment Systems and Get Beyond. It was during this time that his love of wine, food, and fellowship would culminate in the opening of M's on 4th. Many wonderful friendships were forged during this time. He loved his employees and all that entered M's doors. He always worked to provide a wonderful experience. While still running the restaurant, Vernon became the food and nutrition manager at Mercy One in early 2020. This position opened an entirely different world of health care and serving those who serve others and those in their care. It allowed him a unique opportunity to be nearby when his daughter became ill. He returned to Get Beyond in 2022 and had just recently ventured to start his own small business solutions company after Get Beyond was acquired. Vernon was also involved in the Sioux City Downtown Rotary Club, serving as president in 2012 and the Trees of Siouxland Committee. In his free time, Vernon loved golfing, boating, camping, and simply sitting around a fire pit with great friends. He loved watching sports and cheering on his Phillies, Raiders, Celtics, and Flyers, but his Iowa Hawkeyes would always be at the top of the list no matter what sport or season. While sports were a big part of his entire life, his faith in Christ was what he relied upon and strove to grow in. He cherished his time in the numerous studies and groups he became involved with to study and grow in God's word and plans. Dorothy May Hearing, 96, of Heston, Kansas, and formerly of Sioux City, passed away on Friday, March 15th, at the Showalter Villa in Heston. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, March 23rd, at Central Baptist Church in Sioux City. Burial will be at 1 p.m. Saturday at Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday evening at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Memorial gifts may be given to the mission Russell and Dorothy went to Liberia under, now called Ethnos 360. Address is 312 West 1st Street, Sanford, Florida 32771. She spent the last 3.5 years in Heston, primarily living with her daughter Elaine. She moved to the Showalter Villa in December 2023, where she needed additional care. Dorothy May Gould was born on May 15, 1927 in Sioux City, the youngest child of six to Arthur and Bertha Gould. Her father passed away before she was born. She grew up on a farm northeast of Newcastle, Nebraska. She attended the McDougall School for 8 years and then went to Newcastle Public School for 4 years, where she graduated in 1944. Dorothy kept house for a short time for her brothers since her mother passed away when she was 17. Dorothy attended St. Paul Bible Institute for 1 year and spent one semester at Westmar College in Lamar's before going to Grace Bible Institute in Omaha. It was at Grace that Dorothy met Russell Hearing of Lansdale, Pennsylvania. They were married on February 28, 1953, and to this union, 6 children were born. Russell and Dorothy spent January of 1983 and January of 1984 in Liberia, West Africa, under what was then New Tribes Mission. Russell helped the men in their group build homes for the missionaries. Dorothy helped cook meals, cooking from scratch as there was no place to eat or buy food. They fondly remembered the native Liberian children bringing them an egg or two to share with them. Dorothy was a believer in Jesus as her Lord and Savior. She read her Bible and spent time praying for her family and others. Church attendance was important to her, and she wanted to make sure her children learned about Jesus as well. Dorothy always had a large garden and enlisted the children in potting peas, snapping beans, and husking corn in the summer, along with lots of hoeing and weeding. She canned and froze a lot of garden produce to feed her family. She milked the cows and butchered chickens, making delicious meals of fried chicken for her family. Dorothy was a longtime member of Central Baptist Church in Sioux City. Alice D. Cutters, age 94, of Kearney, formerly of Sioux City, passed away on Saturday, March 16th at the Kearney Regional Medical Center. Memorial services will be 10 a.m. Friday, March 22nd at Faith Lutheran Church in Sioux City. Pastor Ralph Shorey will officiate, and burial will follow at Logan Park Cemetery. Visitation with family present will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday, March 21st at the Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel location in Sioux City. Memorials are suggested to the family to be designated later. Ellis was born on November 30, 1929, to Gaylord F. and Violet M. Eastman. She attended and graduated from Central High School in Sioux City. She married William C. Cutters on May 5, 1950 in Sioux City. Alice was a longtime member of Faith Lutheran Church in Sioux City and later Holy Cross Lutheran Church in Kearney. Alice was a sweet, gentle soul, and family meant everything to her. She enjoyed traveling with Bill in their younger years, and they spent many weekends camping at Gavin's Point Dam in Yankton, South Dakota, prior to building a home and moving to the hills overlooking Lewis and Clark Lake for several years. Sioux City was home, however, and they moved back to Sioux City before spending their final years in Kearney, Nebraska, living in the home of her daughter Jamie and son-in-law Denny, who provided a wonderful home for them. She also enjoyed her sewing club, spending time with friends playing cards, holidays, and special occasions with family. Alice raised 8 children of her own and added several foster babies over the years until they found permanent homes. She and Bill started the Share America program in Sioux City that provided discounted groceries to area families in need. Alice always considered Sioux City home, and the family will be taking her home to her final resting place. Clinton S. Utek, 96, of Sioux City, passed away Monday, March 18th. Memorial service will be 11 a.m. Tuesday, March 26, with visitation 1 hour before, all at Calvary Lutheran Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. And that concludes the obituaries for today. We'll now move to the weekly column by Kathy Yolder, who is a devotional writer. And this week she writes, "We know what it means to take up tennis, take up knitting, or take up a new hobby. But what does it mean to take up our cross? In Matthew 16:24, Jesus says to his disciples, 'If any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way, take up your cross, and follow me.' We must have the desire to follow Jesus, to learn from him. Following Jesus isn't like following someone on social media and liking them on Facebook. No, this is a lifelong commitment. When I was in high school, David Wilkerson and Nicky Cruz came to my town. A country preacher, the Lord called Wilkerson to take up his cross and follow Jesus to the street gangs of New York City. It sounds crazy, but the Lord was with him and lives changed for eternity. Wilkerson met Cruz, who was the leader of one of the most violent and feared gangs in New York. The Lord used Wilkerson to bring Cruz to a saving belief in him. The movie, The Cross and the Switchblade, is about this. Wilkerson took up his cross and followed Jesus right into the middle of life-threatening danger, setting aside his own desire to go where the Lord led him. From Matthew 16, "Then Jesus said to his disciples, 'If anyone wishes to follow me as my disciple, he must deny himself, set aside selfish interests, and take up his cross, expressing a willingness to endure whatever may come, and follow me, believing in me, conforming to my example in living, and if need be, suffering or perhaps dying because of faith in me.'" About 15 years later, Wilkerson and Cruz were in my high school sharing their stories and testifying to God's love. They gave an altar call. Many people went down front to declare their desire to follow Jesus. I was one of them. Taking up our cross and following Jesus isn't for those who want everything their own way. We must give up our own way. That's not easy because we want to do what we want to do. Have you ever heard a small child say, "My way," meaning, "I want to do it my way"? Not everyone outgrows this, but if we follow Jesus, he helps us change. It's a life-changing choice to follow Jesus. It means that we set aside our own agenda. We give up our selfish desires. It also means that we go where he sends us. Not many of us would be called to go to the gangs of New York City, but he might call us to go to the neighbor across the street. That can seem just as daunting. Or he may call us to be a caregiver to a loved one, or to forgive someone who has deeply hurt us, or to help someone who can never repay us, or one of countless scenarios. When Jesus said, "Take up your cross," the disciples knew what he meant. Crucifixion was part of Roman law. Condemned criminals had to carry their crosses through the streets to their execution site. They mockingly shoved a crown of sharp thorns onto Jesus' head, who had already been brutally beaten. He was exhausted, near death, and they expected him to carry his own cross. He couldn't do it, so the soldiers ordered a passerby, Simon of Cyrene, to carry it. Simon didn't choose to carry Jesus' cross, but I imagine that he was changed by that experience. I was once in the middle of a tragic situation. Someone unexpectedly died. I was called to be with the loved ones. I prayed for the Lord's help to minister to them, and I prayed that the Lord would strengthen the people who were helping. They were visibly shaken. For days afterwards, I accidentally ran into others affected by this tragedy. Each one shared their story with me. The Lord helped me to minister to them. Eventually, I realized that these chance meetings weren't by chance. Alone, exhausted, and depleted, a question simply popped into my mind. It became a prayer. "Lord, what does it really mean to take up my cross and follow you?" That's when multiple scenes from the tragedy popped into my mind. Then I said out loud with an understanding I did not have before, "Oh, that's what it means. That's hard." It's hard thinking about it even now. Jesus used that experience to change me. I realize that I do nothing from my own strength, but the Lord's. That's when he calls us. He doesn't leave us alone. That's sometimes impossibly hard things happen in life that we're called to face, but we can only face them with the Lord's help. Also from Matthew 16, "Then Jesus went to work on his disciples. Anyone who intends to come with me has to let me lead. You're not in the driver's seat. I am. Don't run from suffering. Embrace it. Follow me, and I will show you how. Self-help is no help at all. Self-sacrifice is the way, my way, to finding yourself, your true self. What kind of deal is it to get everything you want but lose yourself? What could you ever trade your soul for?" During this Easter season and always, may we remember that Jesus died on that cross for each one of us. May we honor him by taking up our cross and following him. And again, this was written by Kathy Yoder, who is a devotional writer. And then we also have this article about two books that Kathy Yoder has written. Two new Christian children's books written by Kathy Yoder and illustrated by April Yap have been released. The first, entitled The Little Nail, is the story of the little nail who's puffed up and proud to be part of a great boat carrying a king. How disappointed he is when he discovers that he's part of an ordinary fishing boat, and a smelling one at that. Not all is how it seems, though. With the guidance and wisdom of Gramps, an older nail, the little nail learns many lessons, including who the man in the boat really is, the one who cures a leper and loves those others throw away. This revelation is not only life-changing for the little nail, but for the readers as well, Yoder wrote in a plot summary. The little nail will become an Easter standard for all ages, Yoder said of the book. Kathy Yoder's second children's book is The Woodcarver. The woodcarver seems so mysterious as he gently carves out a figure for the little girl. He already knows exactly how his carving will look. The little girl has to know why. Why is the carving so special? What will the carving look like? How will she get to know this special carved man? The Woodcarver is a heartwarming story with a surprise ending, Yoder said. Yoder has been writing since the third grade, a weekly faith columnist for the journal since December of 2004. Yoder has a master's degree in English, art, and mass communication with an emphasis in creative writing. She's a former photojournalist, former director of children's ministries, a retired healthcare chaplain, and a licensed minister. Both books are available at Book People at 2923 Hamilton Boulevard in Sioux City. And if you would like to host Yoder for a book signing or to ask her to speak to your group, contact her at kathyyoder4@gmail.com. We'll now move into some church news. First is Palm Sunday Dinners. Bethany Lutheran Church at 1201 Dubuque Street will hold its annual Palm Sunday Brunch after the 10:30 a.m. worship service on Sunday, March 24th. Serving will be from 11:30 to 12:30 and will feature waffles and syrup, scrambled eggs, bacon, sausage, orange juice, coffee, and milk. The public is invited to both the worship service and brunch, and there will be a free will offering. And another Palm Sunday dinner is at the Community United Methodist Church at 101 Baker Street in Sargent Bluff. They will have a ham dinner from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday, March 24th, sponsored by the Methodist Women. Food served will include ham, au gratin potatoes, vegetable with a salad bar, and dessert. And this is also a free will offering. And now, Holy Week services. Grace United Methodist Church at 1735 Morningside Avenue will begin Holy Week with the Palm Sunday services at 5:30 p.m. Saturday and 10 a.m. on Sunday, where palms will be processed. Services on Holy Thursday and Good Friday will be at 7 p.m. The Easter worship service will be at 10 a.m. All services at Grace Church are open to the general public. Redeemer Lutheran Church at 3204 South Lakeport invites the public to Holy Week and Easter services. Beginning with Palm Sunday, please join on Sunday, March 24th at 8:15 or at 10:45 a.m. Maundy-Thursday services on Thursday, March 28th at 11:30 a.m. and at 7 p.m. with Holy Communion. Good Friday services will be on Friday, March 29th at 11:30 a.m. and 7 p.m. Easter Sunday services with Holy Communion in the Hallelujah Chorus on Sunday, March 31st at 6:30, 8:30, and 10:30 a.m. Easter breakfast served 7:30 to 10 a.m. Augustana Lutheran Church at 6th and Court Street will be holding worship services throughout Holy Week, including Palm Sunday on March 24th at 10 a.m., Maundy Thursday on March 28th at 7 p.m., Good Friday on March 29th at 7 p.m., Easter Vigil Saturday on March 30th at 7 p.m., and Easter Sunday on March 31st with breakfast from 8:30 to 9:30 a.m. and worship of the Risen Lord at 10 a.m. All are welcome. United Lutheran Church, 315 Hamilton Boulevard, will hold services for Holy Week. Maundy-Thursday service will be at 6:30 p.m. on Thursday, March 28th. Good Friday service will be at 6:30 p.m. on Friday, March 29th. And service will be at 6:30 p.m. on Saturday, March 30th. Easter Sunday services will be a sunrise service at 7 a.m. and regular service at 10 a.m. with an egg bake breakfast following the sunrise service. St. Mark ELCA at 5200 Glen Avenue will hold Holy Week services with Maundy Thursday worship at 7 p.m. on March 28th, Good Friday worship at 7 p.m. on March 29th, and Easter Sunday worship at 7 a.m. and 9 a.m. on March 31st. Living Faith Lutheran Church, a new ELCA congregation in Lamar's, meets at the Presbyterian United Church of Christ at 858 7th Avenue Southeast in Lamar's, and they will hold Easter Sunday worship at 11:15 a.m. on March 31st. And that does it for the recording of today's paper of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, March 21st. I'm your reader, Dagna. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thank you for listening. Thank you.
Roxanne Watson is on a mission.
Hello, how are you doing today?
She wants more people to register as organ, eye, and tissue donors.
Are you an organ donor?
Yes, I am.
Yay!
My goal is to sign up the most people in the United States.
What drives her? Roxanne's own life was saved through the gift of a heart transplant, made possible by an organ donor.
I decided that day that I was going to devote myself to the cause of organ donation and signing people up and honoring my donor by doing that.
Now she's back to health, and she's a powerful force helping to save lives every day through her work. Imagine what you can make possible by leaving behind the gift of life.
8 people can be helped with the major organs, and up to 50 people can be helped with a little bit of everything. And when you think about it that way, that you could help that many people, it's amazing, it really is.
Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.